Chapter 5. Mr. Ralph Nickleby receives sad tidings of his brother, but bears up nobly against the intelligence communicated to him. The reader is informed how he liked Nicholas, who is herein introduced, and how kindly he proposed to make his fortune at once, having rendered his zealous assistance towards dispatching the lunch, with all that promptitude and energy which are among the most important qualities that men of business can possess. Mr. Ralph Nickleby took a cordial farewell of his fellow speculators, and bent his steps westward in unwonted good humor. As he passed Street Paul's, he stepped aside into a doorway to set his watch, and with his hand on the key, and his eye on the cathedral dial, was intent upon so doing, when a man suddenly stopped before him. It was Newman Knox. "Ah, Newman," said Mr. Nickleby, looking up as he pursued his occupation. "The letter about the mortgage has come, has it? I thought it would." "Wrong," replied Newman. "What? And nobody called respecting it?" Inquired Mr. Nickleby, pausing. Knox shook his head. "What has come, then?" Inquired Mr. Nickleby. "I have," said Newman. "What else?" demanded the master, sternly. "This," said Newman, drawing a sealed letter slowly from his pocket. "Postmark, Strand, black wax, black border, woman's hand, CN in the corner." "Black wax?" said Mr. Nickleby, glancing at the letter. "I know something of that hand too. Newman, I shouldn't be surprised if my brother were dead." "I don't think he would," said Newman, quietly. "Why not, sir?" demanded Mr. Nickleby. "You never are surprised," replied Newman, "that's all." Mr. Nickleby snatched the letter from his assistant, and fixing a cold look upon him, opened, read it, put it in his pocket, and having now hit the time to a second, began winding up his watch. "It is as I expected, Newman," said Mr. Nickleby, while he was thus engaged. "He is dead." "Dear me. Well, that's a sudden thing. I shouldn't have thought it, really." With these touching expressions of sorrow, Mr. Nickleby replaced his watch in his fob, and, fitting on his gloves to a nicety, turned upon his way, and walked slowly westward with his hands behind him. "Children alive?" inquired Knox, stepping up to him. "Why, that's the very thing," replied Mr. Nickleby, as though his thoughts were about them at that moment. "They are both alive." "Both?" repeated Newman Knox, in a low voice. "And the widow too," added Mr. Nickleby, "and all three in London, confound them, all three here, Newman." Newman fell a little behind his master, and his face was curiously twisted, as by a spasm, but whether of paralysis, or grief, or inward laughter, nobody but himself could possibly explain. The expression of a man's face is commonly a help to his thoughts, or glossary on his speech, but the countenance of Newman Knox, in his ordinary moods, was a problem which no stretch of ingenuity could solve. "Go home," said Mr. Nickleby, after they had walked a few paces, looking round at the clerk as if he were his dog. The words were scarcely uttered when Newman darted across the road, slunk among the crowd, and disappeared in an instant. "Reasonable, certainly," muttered Mr. Nickleby to himself as he walked on, "very reasonable. My brother never did anything for me, and I never expected it. The breath is no sooner out of his body than I am to be looked to as the support of a great hearty woman and a grown boy and girl. What are they to me? I never saw them." Full of these and many other reflections of a similar kind, Mr. Nickleby made the best of his way to the Strand, and, referring to his letter, as if to ascertain the number of the house he wanted, stopped at a private door about halfway down that crowded thoroughfare. A miniature painter lived there, for there was a large gilt frame screwed upon the street door, in which were displayed, upon a black velvet ground, two portraits of naval dress coats with faces looking out of them, and telescopes attached. One of a young gentleman in a very vermilion uniform, flourishing a saber, and one of a literary character with a high forehead, a pen and ink, six books, and a curtain. There was, moreover, a touching representation of a young lady reading a manuscript in an unfathomable forest, and a charming whole length of a large-headed little boy, sitting on a stool with his legs foreshortened to the size of salt spoons. Besides these works of art, there were a great many heads of old ladies and gentlemen smirking at each other out of blue and brown skies, and an elegantly written card of terms with an embossed border. Mr. Nickleby glanced at these frivolities with great contempt, and gave a double knock, which, having been thrice repeated, was answered by a servant girl with an uncommonly dirty face. "Is Mrs. Nickleby at home, girl?" demanded Ralph sharply. "Her name ain't Nickleby," said the girl. "LaCreevy, you mean?" Mr. Nickleby looked very indignant at the handmaid on being thus corrected, and demanded with much asperity what she meant, which he was about to state, when a female voice proceeding from a perpendicular staircase at the end of the passage inquired who was wanted. "Mrs. Nickleby," said Ralph. "It's the second floor, Hannah," said the same voice. "What a stupid thing you are. Is the second floor at home?" "Somebody went out just now, but I think it was the attic which had been a cleaning of himself," replied the girl. "You had better see," said the invisible female. "Show the gentleman where the bell is, and tell him he mustn't knock double knocks for the second floor. I can't allow a knock except when the bell's broke, and then it must be two single ones." Said Ralph, walking in without more parley. "I beg your pardon, is that Mrs. Law? What's her name?" "Creevy LaCreevy," replied the voice, as a yellow headdress bobbed over the banisters. "I'll speak to you a moment, ma'am, with your leave," said Ralph. The voice replied that the gentleman was to walk up, but he had walked up before it spoke, and stepping into the first floor, was received by the wearer of the yellow headdress, who had a gown to correspond, and was of much the same color herself. Miss LaCreevy was a mincing young lady of 50, and Miss LaCreevy's apartment was the gilt frame downstairs on a larger scale and something dirtier. "Hem!" said Miss LaCreevy, coughing delicately behind her black silk mitten. "A miniature, I presume. A very strongly marked countenance for the purpose, sir. Have you ever sat before?" "You mistake my purpose, I see, ma'am," replied Mr. Nickleby, in his usual blunt fashion. "I have no money to throw away on miniatures, ma'am, and nobody to give one to, thank God, if I had. Seeing you on the stairs, I wanted to ask a question of you about some lodgers here." Miss LaCreevy coughed once more. This cough was to conceal her disappointment, and said, "Oh, indeed." "I infer from what you said to your servant that the floor above belongs to you, ma'am," said Mr. Nickleby. "Yes, it did," Miss LaCreevy replied. "The upper part of the house belonged to her, and as she had no necessity for the second floor rooms just then, she was in the habit of letting them. Indeed, there was a lady from the country and her two children in them, at that present speaking." "A widow, ma'am?" said Ralph. "Yes, she is a widow," replied the lady. "A poor widow, ma'am," said Ralph, with a powerful emphasis on that little adjective which conveys so much. "Well, I'm afraid she is poor," rejoined Miss LaCreevy. "I happen to know that she is, ma'am," said Ralph. "Now, what business has a poor widow in such a house as this, ma'am?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, very true, apostrophe, replied Miss La Creevy, not at all displeased with this implied compliment to the apartments. Exceedingly true. Apostrophe, I know her circumstances intimately, ma'am, apostrophe, said Ralph. In fact, I am a relation of the family, and I should recommend you not to keep them here, ma'am. Apostrophe, I should hope, if there was any incompatibility, to meet the pecuniary obligations, apostrophe, said Miss La Creevy with another cough, that the lady's family would apostrophe, no they wouldn't, ma'am, apostrophe, interrupted Ralph, hastily. Don't think it. Apostrophe, if I am to understand that, apostrophe, said Miss La Creevy, the case wears a very different appearance. Apostrophe, you may understand it then, ma'am, apostrophe, said Ralph, and make your arrangements accordingly. I am the family, ma'am, at least, I believe I am the only relation they have, and I think it right that you should know I can't support them in their extravagances. How long have they taken these lodgings for? Apostrophe, apostrophe, only from week to week, apostrophe, replied Miss La Creevy. Mrs. Nickleby paid the first week in advance. Apostrophe, then you had better get them out at the end of it, apostrophe, said Ralph. They can't do better than go back to the country, ma'am. They are in everybody's way here. Apostrophe, certainly, apostrophe, said Miss La Creevy, rubbing her hands. If Mrs. Nickleby took the apartments without the means of paying for them, it was very unbecoming a lady. Apostrophe, of course it was, ma'am, apostrophe, said Ralph. And naturally, apostrophe, continued Miss La Creevy, I who am, at present am an unprotected female, cannot afford to lose by the apartments. Apostrophe, of course you can't, ma'am, apostrophe, replied Ralph. Though at the same time, apostrophe, added Miss La Creevy, who was plainly wavering between her good nature and her interest, I have nothing whatever to say against the lady, who is extremely pleasant and affable, though, poor thing, she seems terribly low in her spirits, nor against the young people either, for nicer or better behaved young people cannot be. Apostrophe, very well, ma'am, apostrophe, said Ralph, turning to the door, for these encomiums on poverty irritated him. I have done my duty, and perhaps more than I ought. Of course nobody will thank me for saying what I have. Apostrophe, I am sure I am very much obliged to you at least, sir, apostrophe, said Miss La Creevy in a gracious manner. Would you do me the favor to look at a few specimens of my portrait painting? Apostrophe, apostrophe, you're very good, ma'am, apostrophe, said Mr. Nickleby, making off with great speed, but as I have a visit to pay upstairs, and my time is precious, I really can't. Apostrophe, at any other time when you are passing, I shall be most happy, apostrophe, said Miss La Creevy. Perhaps you will have the kindness to take a card of terms with you? Thank you, good morning. Apostrophe, good morning, ma'am, apostrophe, said Ralph, shutting the door abruptly after him to prevent any further conversation. Now for my sister-in-law. Bah! Apostrophe, apostrophe, climbing up another perpendicular flight, composed with great mechanical ingenuity of nothing but corner stairs, Mr. Ralph Nickleby stopped to take breath on the landing when he was overtaken by the handmaid, whom the politeness of Miss La Creevy had dispatched to announce him, and who had apparently been making a variety of unsuccessful attempts, since their last interview, to wipe her dirty face clean, upon an apron much dirtier. What name? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the girl. Nickleby, apostrophe, replied Ralph. Oh! Mrs. Nickleby, apostrophe, said the girl, throwing open the door, here's Mr. Nickleby. Apostrophe, a lady in deep mourning rose as Mr. Ralph Nickleby entered, but appeared incapable of advancing to meet him, and leant upon the arm of a slight, but very beautiful girl of about 17, who had been sitting by her. A youth, who appeared a year or two older, stepped forward and saluted Ralph as his uncle. Oh, apostrophe, growled Ralph, with an ill-favored frown, you are Nicholas, I suppose? Apostrophe, apostrophe, that is my name, sir, apostrophe replied the youth. Put my hat down, apostrophe said Ralph, imperiously. Well, ma'am, how do you do? You must bear up against sorrow, ma'am, I always do. Apostrophe, mine was no common loss. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Nickleby, applying her handkerchief to her eyes. It was no uncommon loss, ma'am, apostrophe, returned Ralph, as he coolly unbuttoned his spencer. Husbands die every day, ma'am, and wives too. Apostrophe, and brothers also, sir, apostrophe, said Nicholas, with a glance of indignation. Yes, sir, and puppies, and pug dogs likewise, apostrophe replied his uncle, taking a chair. You didn't mention in your letter what my brother's complaint was, ma'am. Apostrophe, the doctors could attribute it to no particular disease, apostrophe said Mrs. Nickleby, shedding tears. We have too much reason to fear that he died of a broken heart. Apostrophe, pooh. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Ralph, there's no such thing. I can understand a man's dying of a broken neck, or suffering from a broken arm, or a broken head, or a broken leg, or a broken nose, but a broken heart, nonsense, it's the cant of the day. If a man can't pay his debts, he dies of a broken heart, and his widow's a martyr. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.